Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have a very special guest, and I know I say that very often, but this is truly a delight for me. My very longtime friend, Dr. Francesca Jackson, is our guest tonight. She is a trauma specialist, workshop leader, and speaker with 40 years of personal practice in meditation and breathing techniques. Over the past 21 years, she has brought healing transformation to incarcerated individuals, women with cancer, the HIV community, veterans with PTSD and MST. Her travels with this knowledge have included Haiti before and after the earthquake, Senegal, Botswana, South Africa, and a number of locations within the United States. Her business, Yin Rise, offers technologies that are self-administered and self-empowering, utilizing the science of the breath, wisdom of the heart, and the power of meditation to assist in clearing the trauma from your nervous system and restoring you back home to yourself again without reliving the past. For more information, you can visit her website, which is yinrise.com, and I have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Francesca to the show. Good day, Francesca.
Good day. Thank you so much for having me. This is really a treat.
It is. I've wanted this since I started my show 5 years ago. So I am very, very delighted to have you here and really look forward to sharing you with the listeners, you know, and what you have to offer. So this is really a treat for me.
Thank you.
Well, let's go ahead and start. I gave just a hint of what your journey was like, but would you mind sharing a little bit more about your work up to this particular point?
Well, by profession, I am a chiropractor and a homeopath and had a private practice in the Bay Area in the 80s, and it was during that time that I found that I really enjoy what I call working on the margins. It was the time that the HIV epidemic was raging in San Francisco and the Bay Area. And at the same time, the women's cancer epidemic was happening. And people who walked into my offices, for many of them, sexual trauma was the thing that was really running their lives. And there were many women and men who came, and I was the first person that they had told. And so the healing began then. And I was in private practice for about 15 years and then decided that I wanted to do my work in a different way, because regardless of what it is I'm doing, my commitment is to healing. And so I started to work with a humanitarian organization that allowed me to work with gang kids that were incarcerated, men, women, boys, and girls, and travel in different countries and work with different people in different circumstances. And the thread around all of those is that for the most part, there's some level of trauma in all of those instances. And when I stopped doing that about a year ago, I decided, okay, it's time to change again. And I decided that I wanted to focus on women who are experiencing and have experienced sexual violence.
Yeah, we know. One of the things that I have always admired is your commitment to the healing process, the work that you have done with those, you said are like on the fringe, or those who probably many professionals kind of overlook, or kind of don't really give a whole lot of attention to. But to me, that was always one of the best things that I really admired about you, and still do.
I think that we can't. We're right now. We are collectively in a time of planetary transformation, undeniable. No matter where in the world you are, the world is changing rapidly in many ways. And while there is still a lot of darkness that exists on our planet, the light is growing brighter. And from where I look, I don't see that there's any human potential that we can afford to be without.
Yeah.
And, especially in the transformational world, the thing that I think is delightful is that a lot of people are looking towards what would be termed spirituality, and people are looking at different ways of being. And yet, we can't discount people who are standing in what might be called darker places, or people whose lives have been frozen by one thing or another, and people who may not have access to a lot of the tools that are available in the transformational spiritual world right now. We can't leave anybody behind.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and in the work that you do, turning their lives around, helping them turn their lives around, that kind of ripples out, and I'm sure, the people who have been helped by your work go on to be able to, to help others, with the idea of, this was my life, this is where I was. Dr. Francesca helped me kind of, see a better way of being, and now I can help you do that. So it's kind of like a wonderful ripple effect.
Well, I think it is actually, as you said that, the first thing that popped into my mind was a couple of years ago, I was at the United States Conference on AIDS in New Orleans, and this young man walked up to me and he said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "Of course I remember you." When he came to do a program with me, he was suicidal. He had decided this was going to be the last thing for him, and if this didn't help him, that his life, which he had decided was essentially over, that he was going to end it. And at the point where he was standing in front of me, he had gone to nursing school. He has a master's in nursing. He is now the head of a program at the University of California in San Francisco. And he looks so bright and so happy. And that kind of thing is always fulfilling, to know that life has really changed for people.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that we're going to talk about your work and your Yin Rise program, and specifically working with women. But prior to that, I want to just, the fact that you have, I want to kind of just talk about a couple of the other areas where you've worked, and, just to get an idea, because your experience really helps a wide variety of people who have been dealing with trauma, and it seems that there are some, maybe some common elements, you know, of a traumatic experience, so to speak, with the work that you've done. Well, let's first of all talk about the incarcerated aspect. You know, the men, women, boys, and girls who have been you know, behind bars. With working with them, you know, there is, what did you find was probably some of the most difficult aspects, you know, because was it the what got them there, or is it the, you know, life behind bars? So how did you kind of help those individuals cope with their situation?
Well, first of all, I think that anyone who is incarcerated in this country, because there is so much incarceration in this country, that it's really a matter of there but for the grace go I. The people who are locked up in this country, many of them are brilliant and creative individuals who may have taken a wrong turn. Many of them, especially caught up in the drug trade, there's a way in which people who are substance abusers are among the most sensitive people that there are. And so there may have been some other kind of trauma that has occurred in their life that drove them to do what it was that ended up getting them incarcerated. And it's a traumatic place to be. It's not like being in Disneyland by any stretch of any imagination. And I think that, like everywhere, no matter where your feet find you, being able to feel good about yourself, being able to get rest and handle the stress that you encounter on a day-to-day basis is really important. And for me, because I don't see people who are incarcerated as really being any different than anyone else, I see that these are individuals just like anyone else. They just happen to be somewhere that is not necessarily ideal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and that particular perspective of you know, of seeing them, you know, in that manner, I'm sure is so refreshing, you know, because they probably are confronted constantly with all kinds of judgment and you know, preconceived ideas, you know, that people may have, you know, regarding their incarceration.
And that is true of everyone. I think everyone wants to be seen. Everybody wants to be seen for who they are. Everyone wants to be allowed to stand in their own dignity, no matter what mistakes they may have made. And there's, you know, So far I haven't encountered anyone on this planet who has not made a mistake, who has not been somewhere that they did not want to be.
Yeah.
And I, you know, just being able to see people for who they are and address every person without judgment, which is, you know, one of the spiritual principles that gets talked about a lot, and being able to actually put that in practice is a thing that I think we all should be doing.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you've also worked with, I remember very clearly your work in Haiti, during that time. I mean, since we've known each other for over 20 years, I mean, I've known when you've taken these trips, you know, to Africa and to Haiti and truly all throughout the United States. With Haiti, you went there before and after the earthquake. So would you mind talking a little bit about your experience, you know, because obviously that earthquake and the devastation of the cause, you know, created a whole bunch of trauma, you know, for the people there. Would you mind talking just a little bit about, you know, the unique circumstances there and the challenges that you faced in helping people cope?
Well, it was a poor country before the earthquake. And when you have a country where indoor plumbing is not available to everyone, where there is a high degree of poverty and everyday struggle, one of the beauties about the Haitian people is that they also have an incredible amount of personal pride. And yet, day-to-day struggles of survival are taxing for anyone. So when the earthquake came, I think I was in two different cities. I was in Port-au-Prince, and I was further up the coast in a place called Le Caye. And especially in Port-au-Prince, where I would say, you know, a good portion, perhaps three-quarters of that city was no longer standing. A friend of mine told me a story of driving his truck around picking up dead bodies out of the street. A friend of mine, her cook had gone out right before the earthquake came and ended up losing her life when a wall fell on her. So, you know, as people walk around, as one friend of mine said, she said, my whole life that has been here, my whole life is no longer here because the buildings are no longer there, the structures are no longer there, life had changed. And so, of course, that's a very stressful and very traumatic thing. And it took a while for people to arrive to help, and things don't happen in a day. And so people living in very crowded situations, it's very traumatic. It's very traumatic.
Yeah.
It's very challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, to me, you know, that whole, you know, the earthquake and the loss of life and property, and again, it being a poor nation to begin with, and, you know, I'm sure a lot of the structures weren't, you know, built as, you know, as strong, you know, as they are, you know, in many parts of the world. So I'm sure that even contributed, you know, to the loss. And it just, you know,
it's
to me,
it's... outline. You know,
yeah.
My friend watched the earthquake travel all the way through the city right along the fault line.
Wow.
And so I think no matter how strongly things are built,
yeah.
You know, when the earth moves, she moves.
Yeah. Boy. Yeah, that's something. Now, also, you have worked, you mentioned just a little bit earlier about working with the HIV community, you know, during the height of the epidemic. And, you know, that you worked there, and then, with them. And then you've also done a lot of hospice work. You know, one of the things that I remember very clearly is that you quite often were with people who were transitioning, you know, out of this life and into spirit. And, you know, to me, every time that you spoke about that, it seemed to me that it was for you, it seemed to be, the way you described it, it was like an honor and a privilege and magical in a way to be there during that time.
It is. I think it's exactly that. I think, you know, in the same way that someone gets midwifed into life on this planet, I think of it in a way as midwifing someone into their death. And as a spirit gets closer and closer to leaving this planet, it's so very tangible. And being there to witness that and to serve that transition is actually one of my favorite things to do. There's nothing nothing like it. And people leave this planet in all different ways, whether they are leaving quietly and peacefully or whether they are resisting every moment. Being able to be there is a pretty magical thing. Just, you know, in the same way that the magic that you feel when a baby gets born, like, wow, all of a sudden they're here out of nowhere. And the same thing at that moment, at that instant of the last breath, poof, and they're gone. And it's very magical. It's very, very beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was one thing. See, I never used to have that perspective, you know, until I, you know, met you and you started telling me, you know, and we were talking about certain individuals and certain circumstances that, you know, where that happened for you. And I clearly remember that perspective when my father passed, you know, because I was with him, not at the moment he did, but just shortly before he chose to leave when I was not there, which I think it was, you know, he was a very private person. So I think that was that was obviously his choice. But I remember our talks and how important it was to be there, to, you know, kind of be supportive, and so I mean that was your work with that helped me during that particular time, you know, and that was something that I don't think I've ever told you that, but
well, thank you for telling me that.
Here
I think
we are
that there's a lot of fear of death in not only our society, but in many societies. And, you know, hanging on to youth and hanging on to a sense of immortality. We remain immortal in the hearts of those who are here after we are gone. And it's part of the cycle of life that we come and we're here for a while on. And, you know, having the perspective that it is part of the cycle of life and that at the end of life, it's not that there is someone there waiting to judge you or beat you. That is not what occurs, but that you've lived a life to fullness and that you have done, you know, as much as you can here to live a life of integrity and live a life of love and compassion for the other people that are here and develop and use the gifts that you have been given and share with the rest of the world. And then when that in comes, it's a job well done, and it's easy to move on.
Wow, yeah. You know, that's the one thing that I kind of have taken, you know, from that whole experience. It was the idea of, you know, a life well lived is one that has made the world and the people in it that you touched better than, you know, when you, you know, if you weren't here. So, I mean, it was just by improving the world and the people in it, in your life, better, then that's a successful life.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Well, now, one of the things that also you talked about, and we're going to kind of now shift into your current work, you talked about working with veterans with PTSD and female veterans with MST, which is military sexual trauma. And so, you know, now that you're kind of putting all of that experience together, you know, why is it that you chose that particular area, you know, to be a major focus for you?
Well, the major focus right now is actually sexual trauma. And I chose it because violence against women is a global epidemic. It is everywhere. The United Nations has talked about the epidemic of rape and sexual abuse as a global moral crisis. And it's happening in every culture, in every ethnicity, in every social class, in every social economic status. It's everywhere, and it's alarming. And I think that it is unconscionable. It's being used worldwide. Rape is being increasingly used as a weapon of war. Women are being trafficked for sexual purposes all over the world, including here in the United States. When you look at violence, I was thinking IPV, which is intrapartner violence, which is often referred to still as domestic violence. That's happening at alarming rates in the world, so that even if people are not aware that it might be going on in the household right next to them. There was one city that I found in Mexico where it is the third most important cause of morbidity. For women, that women are being killed by their partners. And so I think that it's unconscionable and that we have to do something about it.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing at the frequency that it happens. And then we're going to be actually going into a break in a few minutes. And then, I want to talk a little bit about a lot of the discussion around, around the trauma experience and ways to be able to help women in particular be able to overcome or work through, that particular trauma. But I do want to let the listeners know that if you would like to call in and ask Francesca any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. Or for those of you who are in the chat room, if you want to type any questions in, feel free to do that. And I just want to let you know, Renee, I see you listening in the chat room, and we're going to talk a little bit about we have a listener, Francesca, who whose sister is kind of coping with that, and I want to mention what she has and see if maybe you have some words of advice for her. Okay, so why don't we go ahead and just take this break, and when we come back again, let's then move into the definition, of this is, and maybe some of the typical types of scenarios that happen, after a woman has been violated. Okay.
All right.
Okay. So everyone, stay tuned. We're going to be right back after this very brief break.
Hi, it's Maya at Mind Over Matter in Nyack, New York. I'd just like to take a moment to share with you how amazing I found Robert Sharpe's book, Joy Potential. It kind of found me at a time when I was feeling out of sorts and overwhelmed and I guess derailed by the pressures of my career and my large family and caregiving and ailing husband. I just really felt like my spark was dimming. It was a perfect time for me to pick up Joy Potential because as I, just in the first few pages, began to read, I found that my frame of mind wasn't so different from others dealing with challenges and the trials and tribulations of life. I guess my first feeling was that I wasn't alone, and with that I began to open more to receive the message that Robert gave of light and love and positive thinking. That's what Joy Potential is all about. His thoughts are beautifully written, and everyone, whether you're going through your own personal challenges, should read it. His message was certainly well received from me, and I'm thankful for his insight and his caring and really helping me to get back on track. I think everyone should put Joy Potential on the top of their reading list. Love and light. Thank you.
For more information or to purchase your copy of Joy Potential, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, I do want to thank Maya Nash for that testimonial. I appreciate it. She also has books, Joy Potential, at her bookstore, Mind Over Matter, in Nyack, New York. So if you're in that area, check that out. Okay, back to today's show. Again, my very special guest is Dr. Francesca Jackson, and we are talking about her work now called Yin Rise, Rise Out of Trauma and Thrive, and talking about how to work with individuals who have experienced trauma, and women in particular. You can find out more about her by visiting her website, which is yinrise.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, with that, we're back. Francesca.
Hi, I'm still here.
Hey. Well, I am just actually giddy with you being on the show. I am so happy to have you here.
Thank you.
For those of you listening, I mean, Francesca and I used to have hours worth of conversations. And so anyway, it's a delight to have her. And by the way, I do want to give a shout out to those listening in the chat room. My friend Chris from Canada, she has her own show here on Blog Talk Radio. And also Renee, and then Corrine from Supernatural Radio. She too has a show here on Blog Talk. Thank you all for listening, and also for the guests that are there as well. Now, with sexual violence, you know, I mean, it really does seem like it's reaching epidemic proportions. And I know that that is, you know, I mean, we can say that, but the reality is that it's huge. I mean, it is affecting not only the women, you know, of today, but also the next generations to come. I mean, because the women are the caregivers and the bearers of our children, you know, and they, you know, they carry that on. So, if we don't kind of nip this in the bud and help women, you know, work through that and actually become healthy again, then it's going to impact the world in epic proportions.
That was a statement. So it wasn't. That was a statement, so, and not a question. But I will start talking.
Sure,
I'm going to talk
that,
a little faster just because I was looking at the time. And I think, first of all, that we always want to be careful. I at least always want to be careful about utilizing the word victim, because I think that women's reactions to sexual violence, rape in particular, is as unique as each individual woman is. And because of the general perception about what rape is and what it isn't, I think that we don't even know the degree to which it's going on, because it's postulated that 3/4 of women who experience rape do not even disclose it. So we are basing things off of, even though it's epidemic, small numbers of people. A lot of women feel that, oh, all right, my situation didn't involve a weapon. Nobody jumped out of the shadows and dragged me off. I'm not having a mental breakdown. there was no weapon used, so it must not be rape in my case. And none of those things are true. And so the whole conversation about what rape is and what it is not is still a very fluid conversation. And a lot of people's perceptions are based off of what is seen on television, what is seen in movies, and what the situations that make the headlines. So the area is pretty broad. And, you know, after at first having this experience, I think that the things that we would imagine that occur are the things that tend to occur. A sense of disbelief is often one of the first things, like, I can't believe that this happened to me. Did this even happen to me? Why did it happen to me? All of those things. And then often blame is the first thing that women assign to themselves. And sometimes there are two different categories. Either I was doing something wrong. Was I drinking? Did I have on the wrong clothes? Was I in the wrong place? Did I lead somebody on? Did I not fight back? It's all about their behavior. And then there's a whole other set where it's assigned to character. Because of who I am, I was not a good person to begin with. And that must be the reason why this happens to me. And none of those things are true. There's a very fine balance between, having a responsibility, say, for drinking and being blamed for the fact that someone assaulted you. And depression generally tops the list. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of women do not disclose. One, because they're blaming themselves. Two, they don't want to be blamed by other people. They feel that they will not be, that nobody will believe them. They feel that they're going to be traumatized again if they tell someone. Going to the hospital, if you go to the hospital, then the forensic nurse has to be called in, then the cops have to be called in, then the social worker has to be called in, and having to go through the entire scenario over and over and over again is more traumatizing. So for many women, they feel that it's actually a position of self-care to not disclose, certainly not to any of the formal systems that we might think about. So for many women, maybe telling a family member, maybe telling a friend might be a way of disclosure. And in some cultures, according to the different statistics, 60% of women don't even do that. And so the longer that you are holding on to traumatic events, the depression begins to change and begins to affect all the rest of your body. And long-term consequences of creating immune dysfunction and elevating your levels of cortisol so that you're always in a fight or flight. Hostility is huge, meaning interpersonal mistrust, always being suspicious, and a lot of cynicism, and a tendency to interpret other people's actions as being aggressive. And if you are suspicious of everyone around you, if you are misinterpreting everyone's actions, then the world is not a safe place. having high degrees of hostility raises your blood pressure. You have an increased risk of getting infectious disease, increased resistance to things like insulin, so easier for diabetes to happen.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, gynecological issues, chronic pain, all of those things are challenges that can come along with having been raped and violated.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, I want to, the listener that we have, her specific situation deals with MST, military sexual trauma. And I want to read to you what she stated, and then maybe you can provide a perspective or some ideas for her. She says, my sister is an MST survivor, and trauma has dominated her life for the past 23 years. This person doesn't know how to help her. Sister lives in England and is reluctant to return because she still fears her ex. Now, she was raped and beaten by her husband, and they were both in the army. So, you know, you talked about the, you know, the whole idea of having to, you know, report it and all that kind of thing. The military offers, being in the military creates a whole different set of circumstances. So can you maybe shed some light on how that how one might be able to help someone who, or how do you help individuals who have, you know, been who have had, you know, military sexual abuse?
Well, one of the differences between the civilian world and the military world is that in the civilian world, it's easy to change your circumstances. In the military world, you do what it is you are told, and you stay where it is you are told to stay. And it's not that, you know, for women in the military, they may often be working alongside their perpetrator on a day-to-day basis. There's a lot of discussion, and we don't really have time to do it justice. But one of the things that I have found with female veterans with sexual trauma is that the disability rates are high. So that women get discharged and going out on disability. And one of the things that tends to happen is isolation. When in some of the courses that I have taught women with MST, I would have someone else take a flyer that I made and take it into the chat room because women isolate. And so the more you isolate, the deeper entrenched things become. And as with anything, the longer that you wait, the harder it is to begin to take steps. So the first thing I think is always that no matter what it is that has happened to you, making a decision that you're going to be the heroine of your own story and not the victim, and that you begin to get self-care. So, I mean, obviously, this woman has told her sister, so you know, some disclosure has begun to happen there. And doing things, even doing small things like that can affect sleep. You can't heal if you can't sleep. You need energy to sleep. So changing one's energy, being able to change the kind of food that you eat. There's a lot of processes that I use with the breath, and it's hard, of course, to make to diagnose anybody or tell them what to do when you haven't actually talked to them. But making a focus on self-care is a really important first step.
Yeah, okay. And the fact that, you know, there was that disclosure, and you talk about how there's a tendency for isolation, it just seems that it's really important to stay engaged, like with the sister, no matter how, you know, maybe minute the interaction, to continually be
engaged.
Even being
there, just the fact that someone is there, and you can continue to reach out, and, you know, at some point people will reach back.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Well, that's good. So, Renee, just, you know, that's the case. And then, Renee, you know, if you want any kind of maybe some further ideas from Francesca, just contact her after the show, email her on her website. She has her email address, and maybe that can maybe she can help you provide you with a few more ideas. But, yeah, we definitely want to, you know, I mean, especially when it's, you know, your family member, a sister, you know, then it's one of those things where you really want to do all you can, you know, and to try and help the person. But so, you know, every woman is
somebody's daughter, yeah, or somebody's sister, or somebody's friend. Every woman is related to someone.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we're going to, you know, just want to let people know where you are going to, Francesca is going to kind of take us through a little bit of a breath exercise shortly. So stay tuned. I mean, we're going to be getting to that, and then it'll be a wonderful way, I think, maybe to kind of come toward the close of the show. But one of the things that, you know, I want to kind of talk about, first of all, what are some of the, you know, we talked a little bit about the consequences, but I want to talk a little bit more specifically about the consequences of sexual violence, and then what your program Yin Rise does to address those issues. So if you wouldn't mind kind of explaining what some of the consequences are and then how you address those.
I spoke about some of the consequences already, depression, disturbances, hostility. There's a lot of gynecological issues, chronic pain, chronic fatigue. One of the things that is not talked about a lot is traumatic brain injury. Often we think about traumatic brain injury being associated with veterans who are blown up, but brain injury can come from having your head smashed against the wall, against the floor, from getting hit in the face a lot. All of those things can create mild brain injury, and consequences of that, you know, the alertness begins to go away, cognitive changes. A lot of times people will say, you know, there's just something different about her. She seems to be changing. And that can be because neurological changes are going on in the brain from brain injury. So there are, you know, there's the whole mental, emotional set of things that goes on, as well as the physical. And in the program, in the things that I teach, everything is self-administered and self-empowering, and what that means is that we utilize the breath a lot of breath techniques, things that come from Qigong, things that come from the Eastern yoga world, meditation and breathing techniques. And the beauty of the breath is that there's actually two aspects to the air that we breathe. The first aspect is all of the chemicals, all of the, you know, the carbon and the nitrogen, the oxygen. But the second aspect to the air that we breathe is the life force itself. Life begins when we take that first inhale. And the life force is called different things in different cultures. In the Eastern culture, in the yogic world, it's termed prana, P-R-A-N-A, which is the life force itself. The Japanese will call it ki, as in Aikido. Chinese speak of it in terms of qi. And, you know, as a homeopath, we talk about the life force. It's that life force without which there is no life. And the amount of prana, the amount of life force that you have in your system is correlated with how much energy you have, how clear you can be, how quickly your body has an ability to heal. And the heart is also the seat of prana. The heart regulates that prana, the heart being the seat of compassion and devotion, not only for other people, but also for yourself. And so doing the things that raise that life force in you, there have been a number of studies that have shown that just utilizing the breath changes the nervous system to move you out of a sympathetic fight or flight mode into more of a parasympathetic, self-soothing kind of mode, from where you can actually begin to heal and change things. It's, you know, a lot of times if you have had things done to you, the beauty of being able to utilize your own breath is that, one, once you learn these techniques, they stay with you forever. They are available to you forever to use in all different kinds of circumstances. And two, it gives you a sense of control. It's like having the remote control in your hand, right?
Yeah.
So that having that sense of control is very comforting to people, because the breath seems like it's very simple, and it is, and it's also very powerful at the same time.
Yeah, very, very much so. Well, do we have time you to maybe have an example exercise?
Yeah, I'm looking at the time.
Yeah, and you know, and we can run over. And we can run over a little bit. So for those of you listening, if we happen to run over time, you know, you can always listen to the extra time in the archives. So yeah, so we can run over. You know, we can run over. We don't have to stick right to the hour. So if you don't mind, you know, we can go on a little bit further.
Well, then let's just have everybody sit with a long spine. Sitting with the feet flat on the floor. And sitting with a long spine. Energy moves through a long spine. And place the hands on the lap, palms facing up. In the palms of the hands, there are very subtle receptors for prana, for bringing the life force into the system. And sitting with a long spine, take a deep breath in and let go. One more time, deep breath in. Relax the body as you let go. Awareness of where you are is important in order to be able to track any kind of progress that you make. And being able to be comfortably in your body is also important. It's your home. Without this body, you cannot be here. So take another deep breath in, and as you let go, begin to scan the body with the mind. Taking the mind through the different regions of the body and look for sensation. What is happening inside your body right here, right now? There may be areas that you might call painful. there might be sensations that you would term stiffness. What is happening inside of your body right at this moment, right now? I'm going to lead you through a very, very basic and very simple breathing exercise. It's called alternate nostril breathing. So you're going to leave the left palm facing up on your lap. And you lift the right hand and place the right thumb on the outside of your right nostril. And take the last two fingers of the right hand, and with you're going to be closing the left nostril, and then place the first two fingers right in between the eyebrows. So closing the nostril, the right nostril with the right thumb, you're going to inhale on the left, using a normal breath, and then closing down the left nostril with the left, last two fingers, exhale on the right. Complete that exhale, then exhale on the right. Switch and exhale left. Inhale left, down the left nostril with the fingers, and exhale right. Inhale right. Switch, exhale left. Inhale left. Switch, exhale. Inhale right. Switch, exhale left. Inhale left. Switch, exhale right. Inhale right, switch, exhale left. Inhale left, and now continue on your own, alternating from the left to the right on your own. One more minute. Now complete the cycle you're on. The palms are resting in your lap, and take one more deep breath in. And let go. And on your next exhale, take both hands and place them right over your heart. And continue breathing at whatever rhythm you're breathing. Inside the heart, there is as much of the hormone known as oxytocin as lives in the brain. Oxytocin is known as the love hormone, and it's responsible for bonding and help with social cues, learning, acceptance. And just by placing your hands over your heart, you begin that flow of oxytocin. As that flow happens, keeping the awareness at the level of the heart, think of one virtue that you have, one gift that comes because of you. Maybe you're a loyal friend. Your creativity. Maybe you're an excellent cook. How smart you might be. Think of a virtue that you have. And as you feel and honor and recognize that virtue, feel the gratitude for your very own self. However loving, kind, creative, loyal you are, that is expressed through you in a way that no one else on this planet can express it. That gift comes through you in a way completely unique. Breathing in and out. Feel the gratitude for yourself and for all the gifts that come because you are here on this planet. And taking one last deep breath in and let go. And slowly and gradually, you can open your eyes. How was that?
Very calming. Very calming. Yeah.
Alternate nostril is something that you can do anytime.
Mm-hmm.
And it not only calms the body and the mind, but it also helps to balance the hemispheres of the brain.
Mm.
And begins to put you in a parasympathetic mode. And that's just the beginning. And so, you know, anywhere that you are, you sit with a long spine, you know, close down the right nostril, start breathing in on the left, and you switch. And you're using your normal breath, breathing in and out. It can be done any time.
Yeah, yeah. The very empowering to be able to be able to do that and
Have that available. You know, to be able to, you know, because a lot of times when we're emotional or hyper or, you know, life is a little frantic, you know, it's a great way to go ahead and get that balance.
You always have the breath. And, you know, for every emotion that we have, there's a corresponding rhythm of the breath. And if you change the rhythm of your breath, you can in turn change the rhythm of the mind and change what is going on in your nervous system. It's only a breath away.
That's wonderful. Well, now, since we're kind of a little bit in overtime, I do want to take a few moments to talk about your work, your Yin Rise. And you are working. You work with both individuals and groups and businesses. Is that correct?
Well, you know, working with individuals and working with people in groups, and I also, part of the program is teaching women who work with women who are healing from sexual violence, like massage therapists or there's a term health coaches, but a lot of health coaches these days, therapists, learning what the actual neurology behind sexual assault is, what the consequences tend to be, how they tend to manifest, and different things that you can do that are easy that can begin to help women, the woman that you are working with.
Yeah. So it would be what you provide is some great tools that these professionals can add to their toolbox in helping women who have experienced sexual violence, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, great. Well, Francesca, this has really been a delight, and I am so happy to have you join me today. I very much appreciate your time, and want to thank you for spending. And hopefully you'll come back sometime, and we'll talk more.
I would love to come back. I would love to come back, and talk more. Be happy.
That
to.
Would be great. Cool. Very great. Well, I'm looking forward to that, and we will definitely make that happen. Once you get some programs up and scheduled, we'll go ahead and have you back and do a little extra promotion on those. And I know we just touched the tip of the iceberg with today's show. But, again, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Francesca Jackson, and we have been talking about Yin Rise Out of Trauma and Thrive. And again, you can find out more about Francesca's program and services by visiting her website, which is yinrise.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.